Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Hello, everybody. I'm so excited to be here tonight. I have to tell you, what an incredible crowd, incredible evening, what an incredible shutdown. Was that amazing? Was that incredible? Longest shutdown in the history of shutdowns. Even my shutdowns are the greatest. They're the greatest. Really incredible. It is truly a great honor for you to have me here tonight. Now, I've been getting tremendous crowds every place I go, and tonight, here in Los Angeles, it's no different. Los Angeles. I just found out that Los Angeles is Hispanic. It's Hispanic. I had no idea. I had no idea. It means City of Angels. No one talks about that. No one talks about that. Now, my Secret Service detail told me there's over 5,000 people here tonight, and 2,000 are waiting to get in outside. In the snow. But the press, terrible people, the press, scum. They're really scum. They're in the back. They're not going to turn the cameras around, are they? No, they're not going to do that. They're going to say it's a couple of hundred people at a podcast show. Lies. All lies. Fake news. As you probably heard, I'm not taking intelligence briefings anymore. And here's why. I work from the gut. I don't need intelligence. I don't want intelligence. Don't bring intelligence near me, okay? Now, I know this is a very diverse crowd tonight here at my rally, but I just want to do a little poll. By a round of applause, who here in 2016 voted for crooked Hillary Clinton? By a round of applause. Wow, absolutely nobody. You could hear a pin drop. That's crazy. Okay, who in 2016 voted for me to make America great again? Oh, that's fantastic. They're calling me their boo. Wow. That's great. That's tremendous. Well, I want to talk about the wall very quickly. It's going to be an incredible wall, an amazing wall, like the one in China. By the way, China's killing us. They're absolutely killing us. Chinese are terrible people. Great takeout, terrible people. And the Democrats say the wall is medieval. I don't care if it's early evil, medieval, late evil. I want a wall. I visited Nancy Pelosi's office on Capitol Hill. Guess what? Walls. There's walls. She is walls. I want a wall. And I will shut down every Taco Bell until we get one. Because that's how they get the money back to Mexico. A lot of people don't know that. But we're going to go for maximum wallage. And I want all my supporters here tonight, all two of them, I want you to know, don't worry about this Mueller investigation. Nothing's going to happen. They keep saying impeached. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to be impeached. And by the way, why a peach? Why not an apple or a pear? I'm impaired. That makes so much more sense. I'm impaired. It's true. But I want to thank the Trump cast people for inviting me out tonight and paying me my $5 million presidential speaking fee. Which I don't need, by the way, because I'm rich. I'm really, really rich. Believe me. So I'm going to take that money and I'm going to donate it to a tremendous charity that's helped so many people. It's called Billionaires Without Borders. It makes it possible for billionaires and high-end millionaires. You see that? I'm very inclusive. Makes it possible for billionaires and millionaires to travel the world without coming in contact with unattractive or poor people. Because who wants to be around poor people? They have no money. They have no money. So right now, we are going to bring out the hosts of Trump Cast Live. Are you ready? Make some noise for him. First up, Virginia Heffernan. There she is. She's very attractive, very attractive. Doesn't she look like Ivanka? She looks like Ivanka.
I hate that I'm flattered by that.
I'm not kidding. Next up, Jamel Bowie. Jamel Bowie. And number three, Leon Kraus. My favorite Hispanic. All right. You three have a tremendous show, and thank all of you. Your people were absolutely incredible. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, and welcome to TrumpCast. This show, as you may know, was started by Jacob Weisberg, so we are continuing the incredible tradition he started before the primary of making a small podcast about this crazy candidate for the nomination, the Republican nomination. And the fact that we still have jobs is something. The cast has changed around a little bit. I've been with the show a long time, and we've had Jamel Bowie for a long time, and he's been wonderful. He is leaving us, and so I think this is your last TrumpCast appearance.
I mean, possibly.
And he's already started, well, I'll have you as a guest, but already started at the New York Times as a columnist, as an op-ed columnist, which is fantastic.
Thank you.
And Leon Krause joins us with a distinguished history as a journalist. He's been a guest on the show many times, and now he's started hosting himself. And I think his shows, not just because of the accent, but I think some of his shows are some of the best.
Thank you, yeah. Virginia. Welcome to Los Angeles. Los Angeles, California.
So, did you guys see this Jeff Bezos news? I actually want to hear how many, like, make some noise if you did. Okay. All right. Because I am floored. I actually had trouble concentrating because I've been doing nothing but thinking about how the richest man in the world, although Bill Browder, who's a guest on the show, sometimes says Vladimir Putin and Jeff Bezos have the same amount of money. I think it's $500 billion. It's a $200 billion, sorry. You know, it's a gazillion.
I mean, once you're at that point, what's a billion, what's a billion?
That's,
you know?
Right. So Jeff Bezos published a story in Medium today, or a sort of letter to the world, saying that he'd been extorted by American Media, which owns the National Enquirer. Jeff Bezos has gone through this big divorce, and the National Enquirer has leaked some very banal sexts that he and his girlfriend exchanged adulterously, but not especially interestingly. But the National Enquirer has a little bit more on him, apparently, or they say they do, namely a list of photographs. So they have these photographs.
A long list of photographs.
What are they?
A long list of photographs.
A long list of photographs. Yeah, I think it's, well, it may, like 9, 11,
that's
something
long.
Like that. That's long. And, you know, they're not photographs of him playing sports with his children. One of them is described as a photograph of his, quote, manhood. That is a legal letter. His manhood. Okay. So anyway, they have a list of photographs. They're sexy, sexed. Some of them are shirtless and so on. And they are going to publish those photographs if he doesn't walk back an investigation that he started into the National Enquirer's political interests. Its ties to Trump are well known. He's done this catch and kill thing with Trump to silence his mistresses. This is David Pecker. Just saying, David Pecker. Try not to make obvious jokes. And we know that Pecker and Trump have been in cahoots, but what's weirder still is that Pecker has been doing some whitewashing for the Saudis and has ties through Trump to various Saudis. Okay, some of you who've been paying attention, I know that's all of you, know why the Saudis and Bezos would have competing interests. Because Jamal Khashoggi, the American resident and journalist for the Washington Post, owned by Bezos, was tortured and murdered at the behest of Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia in the Saudi embassy in Istanbul. So criticism of the Saudi government is something that the Washington Post has embraced because they lost their reporter, right? So when they see Saudi Arabia being whitewashed, understandably, Bezos has gotten furious about it, so he started this investigation into their political angle. So, and also, as we know, Trump already hates Bezos and is always gunning for him. So of course they're going to be publishing stuff about him. So to silence him, they sent him a list of the photographs they were going to show. And Bezos, I don't know what you think about him otherwise, but he did do the David Letterman thing. He did the thing of calling the bluff of your blackmailers and just saying, this is what they say about me. He lists the photographs, you know, in the that exist, but says nothing else about them. And that he is, you know, he's not going to knuckle under to it, but he's calling them out on extortion. So in my mind, this has all the elements of this master story of our Trump times, which is the tabloid stuff, the Stormy Daniels stuff, the sexy stuff, the penis, okay, right? It's just Jeff Bezos' penis is in this thing. All right, that's that part. The middle part is the suppression of the press. I mean, this is as bad as it gets. Like, at one point they say, your representative, the Washington Post, should deny that the National Enquirer, you know, has political agenda. Your representative, you know, the Washington Post is not an organ that represents Jeff Bezos. Organ, ugh, what's wrong with me? So that's the second thing. And the third thing is conspiracy with hostile foreign powers. That, you know, possibly Jamal Khashoggi's murder has been covered up and whitewashed and shifted around by Jared Kushner, we know, who was called in to cover for his bromance relationship, called in by Mohammed bin Salman to help him weather the storm. And we know that Mohammed bin Salman said he was going to put a bullet in the head of Jamal Khashoggi a year ago, and that's right when he was palling around with Jared Kushner. That's that thing. And then that this weird David Pecker is somewhere in the middle of it. So anyway, it's an incredible document that Jeff Bezos has written. It gives us a lot to talk about. And with that, I want to turn it over to what both of you make of this newest installation in the Trump catastrophe.
So there's some new, reporting. The investigator that Bezos hired suggested that, this is very recently, suggested that it's possible that AMI got their information from a government agency, that it's that information about him from a government agency. And so someone in the national security agencies or whomever, perhaps from the behest of the president or one of the president's deputies, was able to get information about a private citizen to AMI, which, you know, if true, if true, and and if true, would be a very big deal. It would be the kind of thing that presidents get impeached for, which is a long way of saying that the funniest thing in the world and the completely fitting thing for the age of Trump will be if this all topples down because of some rich guy's dick. That would be a different rich guy, no less.
We expected the other rich guy.
I don't know if you call it poetic justice. I mean, it's poetic in a sense, but it would be absolutely perfect.
As a Mexican journalist, I get asked all the time whether or not I'm optimistic about the United States, and I always answer yes. I'm an optimistic Trumpcast host, and there are many reasons why I'm optimistic about the immediate future of the country. One of the reasons, especially when I compare it to Latin America, which is another conversation, but one of the reasons is certainly how healthy, how independent the press is. And when I see Bezos pushing back against blackmail, honestly, it gives me hope, because it reflects on the way the Washington Post has behaved vis-a-vis Trump and power and the New York Times. And that's one of the reasons why I'm optimistic about the United States. There are a bunch of others, the state of the opposition, how healthy the Democratic Party is. I mean, just the fact that there are so many people there vying for the Democratic nomination. Jamel has written brilliantly about it recently. And even satire, you know, the fact that in the United States we can have someone like John come on a show like this and just do this kind of satire, and every night Colbert and Fallon less so, and Seth Meyers just go at the president full on. You would think that's normal, but that's not normal. In other parts of the world, it doesn't happen. So I take this whole Bezos experience, at the fact that he was courageous enough to actually come out and say, I am not going to give in to blackmail, And we are going to keep doing what we're doing, me personally as a businessman, but obviously he's speaking in a way for the Washington Post mm-hmm. because he's the owner of it, and he mentions it. I think it's reason for optimism.
I will say real quickly that if you're Jeff Bezos, if you're the richest man on the planet, okay, you got a picture of my dick.
Right, exactly. Right? Yeah.
It's like, what do you, okay, you're going to release it. Okay, oh no, everyone knows what my dick looks like. I still have $150 billion.
It's also, presumably, he was courting his mistress, so presumably it's a flattering shot.
Right. I mean, so, yeah. It's just funny to me that, like, if you're gonna try to blackmail Jeff Bezos, you wanna really step up your game, right? You better have pictures of Jeff Bezos, I don't know, like hunting people on an island.
Yes. Yeah.
But if it's anything less than the most dangerous game.
Plus, we should mention that Jeff Bezos now works out. I mean,
right.
Previously he was just very weak, no, but now he's ripped.
He's psyched that this was the period.
Exactly. He's actually looking forward to it in a way, maybe. Who knows?
Well, let me modify this. If you have a photo of Jeff Bezos shirtless, like choking someone to death.
Right, exactly.
Then don't bother.
Yeah, no. He does start out by saying, someone tried to make me an offer I can't refuse, but I could refuse it, and no one ever has before. Because the thing we know about him is how rich he is. So really other interesting little detail, and I hadn't known this thing that Jamel just told us, which is that the investigator now says it might have been through government sources he got this, which is, you know, very chilling. But the investigator's name stood out to me. I don't know if anyone else recognized it. His name's Gavin De Becker. He's not a private eye. He's apparently who you would hire if money were no object. I mean, Jeff Bezos at some point says, budget is no concern to Gavin De Becker in investigating this thing. Gavin De Becker wrote a book called The Gift of Fear. Did anyone read it or see it? Yeah, it's really interesting. And fear, I mean, clearly he's the guy you would get to steady you. And basically what the letter says, and Leon was saying he thinks it's very well written, and I'm sure Gavin helped him, is that I'm not afraid. And I'm not afraid because I have a lot of money. I'm not afraid because I have a great reputation. I'm not afraid because these photos are trivial. I'm not afraid because I'm not worried about my reputation. I'm not worried.
Because I shouldn't be afraid, because the way you should confront this sort of attitude. I mean, you confront tyranny. You don't appease tyranny.
But it's almost, and I don't know if you what you think about this, but we've imagined that Lindsey Graham and that some others, possibly Pence, that Trump has something on them, that he works along these extortion lines, and that they're falling in line, and the way they repeat strange things. I mean, I think Jerry Falwell Jr. just said he was the greatest president since George Washington.
Wait. Yeah. Sorry.
Blowing past Abe Lincoln.
I mean, you know.
It doesn't, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm just, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the wig. So we've been waiting for these people in the Senate, the Vichy types, to not be afraid anymore, right? To not be afraid to just cross him. And I think there's a template with Bezos.
I don't think you're going to see that in the coming years. And I don't know what Jamel thinks, but when I saw the State of the Union and the ovation after ovation when Trump was blatantly lying, I mean, for me, it was particularly distressing to listen to those, and I counted them, 16 minutes on immigration. It was the most virulent, aggressive speech on immigration he has given, probably since his speech in Arizona during the campaign, which was really horrible to listen to. And it was, again, ovation after ovation when he described the border as this lawless region, very dangerous. And every Republican just stood up and roared. It was terrifying. It reminded me of what it felt like for me, again, as a Hispanic journalist, to be at the Republican convention, listening to those chants of lock her up and build a wall. It was like being in a different time and a different country, to be very honest. And to see that repeated time and time again, and now at the State of the Union, it was a sad sight.
Yeah. What's so strange about it all is that you would think that after the midterm elections and the GOP suffers this really a meaningful defeat, a 40-seat loss, largest Democratic victory since the Watergate era, that would at least like temper some of mm-hmm. the enthusiasm for the mm-hmm. president, like yeah. a recognition that perhaps things aren't on a solid ground, but that isn't there. It's as if, you know, for the remaining Republican congressmen, that the response to losing one's majority in a very dramatic fashion is to kind of just double down on all the things that cause mm-hmm. you to lose the majority. So, I mean, you know, during the State of the Union, the great applause, it kind of made sense. I'm not sure they even know what else to do, mm-hmm. right? Like, if they were to turn on Trump as a group, that doesn't just hurt Trump. It kind of, like, brings the entire Republican Party down. Because
absolutely.
All of a sudden, you know, if you are, I don't know, if you're sort of like Matt Gaetz from Florida, mm-hmm. I guess that's how you say his name, from Florida, and all of a sudden you are now an opponent of Trump, everyone's going to be like, where were you for the past 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm, right? Like, mm-hmm. like why now and not then? And it's easy to imagine the dominoes just kind of falling down, and the result is a kind of complete and total collapse of the Republican Party. And mm-hmm. so there's this sense in which the only thing you can do is clap, right? That, like, everyone in the Republican Party right now, or at least the lawmakers...
It's his party.
It's not just his yeah. party, but they're sort of like... Yeah, I don't know if you remember during the primaries, Jeb Bush was given a speech. I know. was given a speech, and he had like a, you know, applause line, and no one applauded, and he was like, please clap.
Oh, he said, please clap.
Yes. And then everyone dutifully clapped for him. I think a lot of Republican lawmakers are in the position of people who just have to dutifully clap, right? Like, just... Trump's presence every day is a please clap, and they don't know what else to do. And so they just clap, and they just hope that if they clap loud enough, maybe they'll survive whatever's coming.
Yeah. You're terrified till you're not. I mean, I guess that's the thing that I got from Bezos, is every whistleblower, you know, Bill Browder on the show, he blew the whistle on the Kremlin, which he'd been cooperating with all along. He blew the whistle on the Kremlin, and lots of people said, well, why didn't you do something sooner? Like you might have said about Congress if they flipped. You know, there has to be some time where the indignity of standing on your feet, clapping like you're clapping for Stalin, and we know, because they leak all the time, how many people hate him. We know that Ryan and Corker just decided we can't do this anymore. And we know that the people around Trump all hate him. They leak like sieves, telling us that. And someone, and it only takes 4 or 5, will just say, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, I don't think we have a lot of potential profiles in courage. In the Republican Party, I had this strange experience during the State of the Union. I kept the feed on after mm-hmm. the whole thing ended. And so when I saw Trump walk out through the hallway, the main hallway, and I saw how you could hear how Republican lawmakers approached him and almost like kissed his hand. This is a concept in politics in Mexico, for example, el besamanos, no? Yeah. That's a concept. You kiss yeah. hands. Yeah. And Mr. President, great job, Mr. President, could you sign my tie, Mr. President? So there's a cult there. Yeah. There's a cult there. So I don't think we're going to see anyone emerge. Back in the day, I was hoping, and back in the day, it means a while ago, I was hoping that Marco Rubio could emerge as a real contender versus Trump in these years, or vis-a-vis Trump in these years. And there's no one. There's mm-hmm. no one. McCain mm-hmm. had that final wonderful act of courage, and then he left, right? Mm-hmm. So it's his party, like I was saying, and it's very clearly his party. You could see it also in the polls after the speech. I mean, what was it? 85% of Republicans, or even 90%, thought the speech was not only normal but wonderful. That's terrifying, right. Virginia. Terrifying.
Well, there
those
has
numbers.
On the Republican massive Republican support for him, there has been some speculation, I think some evidence even, that it's only people who approve of Trump who identify as Republicans still. That people have, even if they voted Republican in the last election, they will answer the first question, what's your political party? I'm an independent, because being a Republican is being for Trump, as you just said. So I'm not sure in the electorate how many people who are Republicans 4 years ago support Trump and consider themselves Republican. The two things go together.
I wouldn't know because we're in California and here.
Yeah, the Republican Party,
they're almost extinct.
Like, yeah. Died here last year.
That's
like someone,
absolutely right.
You have
someone.
Devin Nunes.
Been dying for a while.
Devin Nunes, come on.
Yes, you're right. I mean, there are some left, but now, you know, it's Republican registration. It's 25% of the electorate. It's incredible. It's even Republicans themselves would tell you, California Republicans would admit that the party's dead for at least a generation.
Wow.
So
I bet it'd be easier.
Welcome to California.
Yeah. It'd be easier to find. It'd be easier to find a blockbuster video here than it would.
You are correct.
Yes,
well,
sir.
I don't want to hammer away at Congress, but I do have a question then for both of you. I get it that that it's very hard to break with your party, and we saw this in Watergate. I get it that they're worried about losing their constituency by not standing up to the president. Some of it's inertia. Some of it's just groupthink. But do you think that there is an element of blackmail when they say things like, or a kind of cult psychology? I mean, when the cabinet goes around and they all give their dear leader praise and then tell the New York Times that they're working against him because he's impulsive and because he's, quote, a fucking idiot, which, like, the phrase that was used over and over again by our former Secretary of State. So they're definitely feeling deep contempt and a sense of being compromised while performing this adulation, this welcome to Pyongyang kind of thing. And why? Is there a letter that was written to them saying, we're going to show these naked pictures of you if you don't say these things, or is it something more subtle?
Didn't stop Rex Tillerson, so.
Yeah, right. We're not
naked
saying
naked pictures
anything.
Of Rex Tillerson.
So I don't think there's any blackmail. I think it's... So Josh Marshall, the publisher of Talking Points Memo, during the primary, referred to a phenomenon he called, not phenomenon, but something called a dignity wraith. That, like, mm-hmm. The people who sign up with Trump, they're hoping to get something, some influence, some power, so something. They're hoping to get something positive out of the experience. Mm-hmm. But the cost of that is that they essentially sacrifice all of their dignity
yes.
to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
They kind of just, it's put on an altar and, you know, it's just like, you know, Abraham stabs it in the heart and it's been sacrificed. And after that process, they're sort of like, in his words, dignity raised. They have no, they're sort of like these disembodied beings.
Oh, wraith, like W-R-A. Like, yeah,
yeah,
got
yeah.
it.
Sorry. I, as you can see, I am drinking a cup of wine. So my pronunciation may not be as great as it ought to be. I'll work on that. But they just completely lack dignity. And so I think that's probably what's happening. It's not so mm-hmm. much that there's any blackmail or that Trump has anything on them, but all these people from Mike Pence to Mick Mulvaney mm-hmm. and whomever, they signed up with Trump thinking that they would get something, that it would advance their careers, mm-hmm. that it would position themselves for future success. And the cost of doing that is apologizing for this man who very clearly should not be president of the United States, who on the list of things he's qualified to run, I'm not sure like anything gets higher than sort of like playground attendant, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And even then,
I was going to say,
even
sketchy.
Then, you know.
Yeah,
like I wouldn't trust him to run a McDonald's. I was a couple like last week. I went to go get an Egg McMuffin, and it was like 7 a.m. in the morning, and the McDonald's was just like a fucking machine.
right.
Sort of like six people yeah. going back and forth, getting everyone's stuff. I wouldn't trust Donald Trump to run that.
No way.
It wouldn't work out. So they have to apologize for this guy who is plainly not capable of doing the job. And in order to do that, you basically have to sacrifice your self-respect.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think it is a strange dynamic where they're aware that they sacrifice their self-respect. They're not sure how to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the path of least resistance is just to continue doing it, to
yeah.
continue acting as if this guy is, you know, the second coming of Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
he's the great emancipator reborn versus, I don't know, a giant dipshit.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
I
what
think
do you
the
think,
solution
Leon?
Would be to offer everyone there right now a gigantic book deal.
Yes.
Because, I mean, maybe, if you, if everyone writes a book, then everyone can leave now.
Yes,
and, I mean,
right.
Let's cut to a chase, right?
Yeah. Right, right.
Maybe
so
that's...
If it's blackmail bribery, they could get the book deal and be Omarosa and be on Dancing with the Stars or get a post at Harvard like Sean Spicer. So that's the bribery part to get out. And then the blackmail is... There are a lot of people who really hung on to Donald Trump, and they look like Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort.
Well, let me tell you, I mean, that was my second point. I really do think that history doesn't forgive or forget indignity.
That's right.
I mean, I go back to Colin Powell, a man whom I admired and I thought was an example of the best of America, a smart, even wise man. And then his years with the Bush administration and those moments in the UN when he had to advocate for an unjust war will never be forgotten and should never be forgotten.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I always think what's going to happen with Trump himself, the Trump family, and that inner circle of Trumpians. And I do think, for example, for Trump's family, that if we would jump ahead, let's say, 10 years, I think the whole presidency and this whole stunt of running for president will prove to be a tragic event for the whole Trump family. They will look back at it, and it will be a tragedy for the family, and it will be a tragedy for the business. Mm-hmm. It will be the worst decision they made as a family and as a business. And part of it has to do with this indignity of the government they've built and the style of governing they've built. I do believe that history doesn't forgive indignity.
I think it's a really good point.
It is a good point.
I think you're absolutely right with Powell, that a man who had the support and respect of pretty much every single person in the United States, who, if he wanted to be president, probably could have been president, is his legacy is just completely tied to the Iraq War. And in the same way, the people who have signed up with Trump, their legacy is now tied to Trump. And so what other choice? I mean, they obviously have other choices, but thinking in terms of just their immediate self-interest, for them, what other choice should they have than to just continue to be on this guy's side? Because the best possible option is that he in some way wins, and thus they don't appear to be complete losers. But like if he loses re-election and... If that happens, the immediate thing which will happen in American political culture is to say, what a crazy 4 years that was. What a horrible mistake. Let's forget it. Then everyone who was associated with Trump is going to really struggle to try to come out of it with any sort of career or
dignity
or decent standing or whatsoever.
They'll have a book deal.
There was a kind of brilliant tweet to this point about, we like to imagine a time where 10 years from now, if a yearbook photo of you surfaced wearing a red hat, it would ruin your career. That alone would be like, Prince Philip giving the Nazi salute or just other proximities. And Colin Powell is such a perfect example. There are other people, too, now, not just like sleazy all the way along like Michael Cohen, but they're, Giuliani was America's mayor. Oprah thought he was amazing. And Giuliani's first line in his obituary is not going to be he was America's mayor, right? He's like, either go to jail or he's riding this train down. And same with Mike Flynn. I mean, I didn't hold a brief for Mike Flynn, but something, these guys like really broke bad and they won't be forgiven, as you say, they won't, even if they don't go to jail. I want to bring out our comedians because they're showbiz and we're in Los Angeles and we're journalists. We have Andy Kindler and Jake Johansson here. Welcome, Andy Kindler and Jake Johansson.
Look, let me right up front. I do not think President Trump is a very good president.
Whoa. Wait a second. Where's the limb?
Bombs.
Pull the limb back.
Yes,
in.
Exactly.
But I'm exhausted. I can't believe you guys can get together and have a serious conversation all the time about the latest thing that he did wrong. He's relentless.
I mean, I am drinking a cup of wine.
I'm on morphine.
Yeah, good.
I'm on morphine.
Yeah,
you got morphine?
Morphine drip.
I only go on social media now until I'm angry, and then I stop.
Yeah.
So it doesn't. That's a good thing about Trump is it's a real time saver. 5-10 minutes, and I'm ready for my day.
Yeah.
Check out. I get my news by people explaining it to me. Like downstairs, you explained the whole Jeff Bezos thing.
Yeah.
That's how I know about it, and I'm ready to have an opinion.
By the way, I explained that exact thing that I explained to you guys, to, you know, a bunch of people and my friends and family. And the other night, my brother just said, "You are manic." And I forgot when I wasn't manic. Like, this is really making us...
It's affecting you.
It's affecting me. You. And you really have the news cycle poisoning. You were saying, Jake, like, it really...
I can't watch and talk about... Also, I can't... I have a hard time... You guys are great, but people...
don't get them wrong.
Don't get me wrong. You guys are great, but people trying to explain what's going to happen next or what it's going to be like 10 years from now, I feel like that's over. Nobody knows what's going to happen next because nobody knew this was... The people who voted for him didn't think he was going to get elected. He didn't think he was going to... We're in surprise time.
Surprise time.
I don't like these kind of surprises. The only thing I want to do is to compare Trump. I've been comparing Trump to Hitler for many, many years. I'm Jewish. We compare everybody to Hitler. I've compared Bill Maher to Hitler, except at least Hitler was likable. But I've compared Trump to Hitler, except at least Hitler was a veteran. And he was.
Yeah,
he was. He served in World War I, and he got poison gas. I'm trying to build sympathy for Hitler. Yeah, think about walk a mile in his boots.
It finally got to him, Hitler. He killed himself.
Maybe. You don't watch the shows I watch, my friend.
All right.
Have you seen the body? I rest my case. He's still in Argentina. They go, look at that elderly curmudgeon limping. I never could get that joke to work in my act.
I love talking about him in Argentina. I think it's right on. But do you get in trouble? Isn't there a rule that you're not, if once you lose when you mention
Godwin, H-I-T. I don't know if I can say this, but Godwin can kiss my ass.
Okay,
I'll tell
how'd
you,
you do that?
Yeah, Godwin's law is was basically a law which in its time maybe made sense, but the idea was that anytime you bring Hitler into a conversation, you lose the conversation because you make it ridiculous. To me, it doesn't get started till Hitler comes into the conversation.
It's not a marital spat until the other person's Hitler.
Hitler's like salt to you. You need it's part of every meal.
I need it, and he's also, if you look at, like, just, I encourage anybody to look at pictures of Mussolini.
Yeah.
And if you don't see the Trump-Mussolini connection, this is, they joked about Hitler that he was crazy. You know, in Germany, he's not going to get anywhere. In fact, they bargained to give him more power. They said the same thing. Yes, Hitler was smarter than Trump, which sounds weird to say, but don't be fooled by the fact that he's crazy. He's not your father's Nazi.
I think Mussolini and Trump have the same hair.
Yeah,
that's a joke for history books.
They did this thing all the time. But at the end, Mussolini blamed the Italian people. At the end. He blamed the Italian people. Does it ring a bell?
Well, Hitler blamed, at least on Downfall, the movie where I learn a lot about history, Hitler blamed the SS, so he blamed the same way Trump now blames his intelligence services.
I did punch up on that movie, Downfall.
Did you? Yeah. Yeah.
I had one scene where I had a guy come in and go, "I just got back from Hitler's bunker. Is he acting odd?" And the joke would be he already was odd.
Do you guys think this time, the Trump presidency, has been good for comedy or bad for
comedy? I think it's the greatest thing for comedy. But, it's not the greatest thing because I don't want to have the whole world explode because I have good material, But it's like there was a time period where nobody wanted to talk about politics. So the fact that they want to talk about politics is good. But still, there's so much anger. And I can't stand anybody with it, when they were arguing about, I wonder if that guy with the Trump hat, what his intentions were. A Trump hat is a swastika. There's no other reason why you wear a Make America Great Again hat. It means you're a Nazi or a new version of a Nazi, or you're a member of the alt-right. Hey, kids, do you hate the Jews and also love bad graphics? Check out the alt-right.
I feel like some of the Trump supporters certainly are racist, terrible Nazis.
Oh no!
But I think all of them now.
Lockstep fail.
Don't understand how they could all. I think some of them are doing it just to make you mad, Andy. I really think that there's some.
Would you tell me that in Germany in 1937? Andy, take it easy.
Well, okay.
Kristallnacht, it's one night. Relax. So your cousin, your uncle's shop was knocked off. Just really, a little blow over.
I hope I'm wrong when I say that I don't think Trump is Hitler, but or I hope I'm not wrong. What? Now you got me confused.
You don't want him to be Hitler.
I don't want him to be Hitler, but I also feel like that's the bar is pretty high for this dum-dum. The idea that he could be a Russian secret agent, it's an insult to secret agents.
Well, he wouldn't know that he was being manipulated by the Russians because he doesn't know anything that's happening to him.
I mean, to go back to what you said earlier, there's something to the idea that Trump is just sort of really, like, he just doesn't know what he's doing. He's sort of over his head. Because you read reports about his schedule every day. So what is the president doing today? Well, he has executive time from 10 to 4, you know.
He'll get like
a burger and some Diet Coke, and he'll just go back to executive time. Now, for political reporters, it's like, oh, the president just isn't doing anything. But if you look at that from the perspective of a normal person, it's like, oh, he's depressed.
Right.
He's in his residence all day, maybe in a bathrobe, watching TV, eating shitty food.
On his bed,
yelling about it on the internet.
He may be depressed because what he was really hoping for was that this whole run for president was going to jack his ratings and he would be able to have his TV show.
Right. He thought,
so he might be depressed.
He thought being president would be sort of like being kind of like a king. It's like, you know, you tell people what to do, you get a lot of fancy stuff. No, it's a job. And he's never really had a job before. So he's just depressed. And so these cabinet meetings, it's all these people who are just kind of like, hey, no, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah. Just get out there. You're still
good. He's like a kid. You're like, you're doing your best. You're really trying.
This is something Leon and I, right, after post-Hitler, we were talking about how after something like the State of the Union, or even with this Bezos thing, what you want to talk about, and I am with you. I started with the dick jokes. But what you want to talk about is the funny stuff and the reality TV. But we're getting a body count on Trump's watch now. We have children dead at the border. We have Jamal Khashoggi tortured, murdered with a bone saw, seemingly with some kind of, you know, accomplice after the fact. And people killed in these brown shirt attacks, including Heather Heyer, by the brown shirts I now think of as red hats. Like, why not just call them red hats? I'm with Andy. I think that that's what they're trying to signify with that way of dressing.
I have a joke in my act, and every time I do the joke, it shocks people, even in like alternative clubs. But the joke is, Donald Trump is going to put us all in Trump's concentration camps. Mm-hmm. The greatest concentration camps ever made. I will get the Jews to pay for the camps.
Yeah. Right.
Now, these people will understand, but most of the time, nobody even knows the reference that I'm saying we'll get Mexico to build the wall. That's the reference, and that's a direct social commentary based on the Jews.
Yeah.
People either get shocked or they don't even know the references because so much has happened.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think we're all living in it. But it can be funny, but it can't be funny, you know, like, hey, this is a lot of great material.
Well, it's the eerie confusion of the whole thing. I mean, that's, I think, Leon's point after the, well, State of the Union, why don't you just say what you were saying about the Pelosi meme?
I was just saying that I think one of the reasons why one can be optimistic about the future of this country is the health of satire and comedy, I think, is fantastic. And incredibly necessary. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't have it, believe me, you would miss it. But I think there's a fine line between not necessarily satire and frivolity. I wouldn't draw a line there because there's no point in comparing the two. But I do think that having said what I said about satire, I think we have to talk about frivolity and the coverage of Trump. Because if we, for example, the State of the Union, if we focus on the Nancy Pelosi clapping memes and the sarcastic clap and Nancy and the Pelosi clap and the wardrobe choices of the Democratic female Congress members, the Congress women, that was very clearly symbolic and incredibly important. I'm not taking anything away from that. But if we focus on that and the way that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was dressed and how she walked into the chamber, and we forget to really examine again, and I could use other examples, but again, just what he said, what this guy said about immigrants, about the immigrant experience, about the border, how his nativist rhetoric has become worse, and the effect that has on people in America. I mean, nowadays, 75%, 3 out of 4 Republican voters, according to a Pew Research poll, recent poll, identify illegal immigration as this country's biggest problem, not salary disparity or opioid addiction or gun violence, the presence of illegal immigrants. So whether or not it's because Trump is dumb or Trump is Hitler-like, the effect of his rhetoric, of his style of governing, is incredibly toxic. And I just would say that we should never normalize this man.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I want to talk about the great state of California, because we're here. 3 of us are from California, and you both live in California, right? And Leon writes a lot about it. And California, unlike Virginia, sorry to do this, is emerging as like the...
Tip of the spear.
What's that?
Tip of the spear.
Tip of the spear.
That's epicenter of the resistance.
At the center
I'm
of the resistance.
I'm not leaving. I mean, it's great. It is great.
Why would you?
It's incredible. Great. Kamala Harris, Adam Schiff. I mean, people who've like really distinguished themselves. Nancy Pelosi, ladies and gentlemen.
Ted Lieu. Nancy Pelosi.
Ted Lieu. And Ted Lieu is out.
Gavin Newsom, Javier Becerra, Kevin DeLeon. The list is really long.
Those last two names again.
One more time.
Okay.
Javier Becerra, Kevin DeLeon.
Ponce de
Leon. Come on, Virginia.
That's like such a corny sense. I just like say Spanish names. Okay. How did this happen? What happened to Nixon country? What happened to Orange County? Happened to Reaganites?
That's a great question. They disappeared, which is fantastic, I think, because it's been happening for a while in the state of California. And what happened during the midterms was extraordinary. I mean, elsewhere in the country, we saw a blue wave, but in California, it was a tsunami. Orange County, like you mentioned, was especially impressive.
Yeah.
Always considered a conservative stronghold, a Republican stronghold. Cities, I remember covering this story recently, cities in Orange County fought to the nail against California's sanctuary laws. But last year, Democrats simply swept the region. I wasn't expecting something like that at all, but they swept the region. And I think the reason is, well, of course, first of all, the Trump backlash was absolute. We saw young people voting. We saw minorities voting. Mm-hmm. We saw the Hispanic vote grew, in the way it should grow in the future, but it certainly increased from 2014 to 2018. And like I said before, even Republicans would admit right now that the party is lost here for at least a generation. Under 25% of California voters are Republicans now. The whole state is dominated by Democrats. Both state senators are Democrats. The governor, Gavin Newsom, the previous governor, the mayors of the state's biggest cities, the Democrats hold a supermajority in the Congress. Plus, like you mentioned, the current generation of California politicians is really incredible. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, and it really surprised me, that there has never been a politician from California or someone from California who has been on a Democratic ticket for president.
Has there ever been a Democratic president from California? No, right?
Never,
no.
No, but not even
we
a candidate
this,
for,
not even a
for
candidate.
President
That's
or
amazing.
Vice presidential candidate. Right. No one on the ticket from California.
And 2 of the iconic Republican presidents of our, in
Absolutely.
Recent memory.
I think it's a safe bet. I don't know what you think, Jamel, that at least we'll have someone from California on the ballot. I think Kamala Harris, I don't know if she'll be at the top of the ticket, but I think it's a pretty safe bet, although I know that you have your doubts, and it's very interesting. That's why I ask you. I think she'll be on the ticket. What do you think?
I mean, I think, and quick parenthetical here, this is not an endorsement of anything. This is just sort of like what I think may happen. But I think she stands actually a very good chance of being the nominee. I think
wow.
she kind of... If you look at 2018 and what Democratic voters seem to really want in candidates, they wanted women candidates, even women of color candidates, the people who have sort of like rocketed to the top of kind of the Democratic the Democratic stars have all been women of color. I think if you just look at where Democratic primary voters are giving their attention, giving their dollars, giving their votes, they're giving it to candidates not unlike Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. And so just by that alone, I think that is a pretty strong signal. You look at her campaign rollout. She raised a ton of money in the first 24 hours. She is one of, I think, a handful of candidates who actually got a major boost in public standing from her rollout. She's facing criticism from the left on her record as a prosecutor, which is a very big deal. And we'll remain to be seen how that plays out in actual primary or the primary sequence. But she has this very strong position. California's been bumped up a bit in the calendar for the primaries. Mm-hmm. And early voting for the California Democratic primary begins when Iowa voting starts. Mm. And so there's this way in which she doesn't really need to win or do that well in Iowa, New Hampshire, because people will already be voting in the largest primary of the entire cycle. So I don't know. I think your sense that the Californian will be on the ballot is probably right. And I think that Californian's gonna, there's a very strong chance that Californian will be Senator Harris for like reasons that have little to do with, you know, her campaign as it stands, but a lot to do with what Democratic voters seem to be looking for.
I agree.
I want a prosecutor. I'm in a prosecutorial mood.
State of mind.
I don't think you're alone. I think a lot of people feel that way.
The pendulum will swing back, and I will hate prosecutorial zeal and DAs running for office trying to get scalps or whatever. But right now, I want a lot of scalps.
The Klobuchar's in town.
Klobuchar is also, yeah, someone I like too. I love that there's so many women that you don't think of, like, am I for the woman or the not woman? Like, it's just the not even part of it. Jake, I want you to have the last word on this, and then I am going to go to some questions from Twitter.
Well, I'm excited about women of color also. White guys have had a good run, but and I would also go back to what you were talking about with California and the election here and the shift to Democrats. Now, I think that that is great, but some of those people, I think, might have been Trump voters who have changed their mind and who have woken it up.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's the effect that he's having, is like he's turned people off of white guys.
Right.
You know,
right.
And they're just saying, look, we need something different. And
it's
and,
like Brett Kavanaugh,
like
he vicks
the trend
himself,
that's happening
he can vicks
here.
Himself. So from Logic Hobbit, I just really like your handle, Logic Hobbit, on Twitter. How would we, should we, think about the risk a post-presidency, non-incarcerated Donald Trump would pose to national security? He would immediately, so we haven't talked very much about my favorite topic, which is the fact that we have a Russian asset agent in the White House. But anyway, if he's out, would he continue to pose a threat to national security? Would he'd immediately trade whatever bits of top secret info he learned as POTUS to the highest bidder without a second thought? Does that seem dangerous? Anyone want to take this? If he doesn't walk out into handcuffs.
I am building altars to him being in prison. I want the whole family in prison. They want the entire family in prison. I want it to be filmed.
And do you want tennis prison with butterscotch pudding on Wednesdays? Well, or you I'm want not, Supermax with nothing?
I just want to make sure I want him to be humiliated on a daily basis.
He'll be humiliated on a daily basis. Not necessarily in jail, but I think that the post-presidency life of Donald Trump regarding his legal troubles is going to be very sad. Mm-hmm. Very, very sad. And I mean, mark my words, we'll be back here, maybe not with a Trump cast or with a different podcast, and we'll look back at that sort of conclusion and you'll see that I'll be proven right. I don't see how he will emerge with any sense of dignity, how he will be respected. And again, history does not forgive indignity. And vulgarity plus indignity, even less so, especially in the United States of America.
If he loses in 2020, if he serves a full 8 years, even, this is gonna be thought of as like a very strange time in America's history, and I don't think anyone's gonna like look back fondly on it. No one other than like maniacs are gonna look back fondly on it. And so when he leaves office, I think that's right. It'll be for him. There won't be no trying to sell secrets or whatever. He'll just be kind of like a lonely old man. I actually think that the post-presidency I have in mind is Lyndon Johnson's. He leaves office. He doesn't run for re-election. He leaves office. And then he he dies 5 years later. Yeah. Once he's out of politics,
without Robert Caro to write a fantastic biography.
I'm not saying Trump is going to like pass away shortly after, but that kind of like fading into obscurity, which used to happen to presidents a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only been in the last 30 years that, you know, after you serve as president, you become kind of like a minor celebrity. It used to be that if you didn't die in office or die immediately after leaving office, you kind of just disappeared. And people were like, hey, you remember that guy who used to be president?
That's like an interesting
point. Throw rocks at your house. Like, hey, that guy used to be the president.
I mean, Jimmy Carter doesn't do a lot of reality TV. But otherwise, they do seem to like, really, they do seem to like.
Jimmy Carter's unusual in how prominent he is, but Harry S. Truman kind of just faded away. Johnson faded away. Nixon even faded away a bit. He pops up here and there, but it's not a big deal. And I think that's going to be what happens to Trump, unless the news media decides that, like, Trump in post-presidency is as compelling a story as Trump as president. The thing that will happen to him if he does not face any legal troubles is he'll just kind of like fade into obscurity. It'll be like, you know, hey, remember that time we elected Donald Trump president? Some wild shit that happened.
Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Leon. Thank you, Jamel. I'm Virginia Heffernan. Thanks for listening to TrumpCast.